champ is here.
Uh-huh.
The champ is here.
I have arrived.
The champ is here.
Holla.
The champ is here.
Listen, the champ I'ma kill him with the first verse.
The
and I'ma bury him with the second.
The champ is here.
Watch.
The champ is here.
Thinking that you better than me.
The champ is here.
Nah, boys, play to see.
The champ is here.
Hate us off when I step in the room.
The champ is here.
Back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And how are you feeling, Andy? Was it awesome? Looked pretty awesome.
Look, it was a lot of fun. This is the men's we're talking about. The women's was too.
Well, but, the women's had two wins in a row. Had their second win in a row. First win at Punt Road for premiership points since 1964. Which is pretty awesome stat that you put out. Unveiling two premiership flags as well. It was a good weekend to be Richmond.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's hard to compete with, with due respect to the women, they're not in the, this is one of the greatest Richmond teams ever.
Mm.
And it was... I've had the song "The Champ Is Here" going round and round in my head because it did really feel like the champ just holding on to the doing just one more title defense, and we don't know how long it'll last. Hopefully forever, but just seeing A, Dusty be best on ground, B, Toby Nankervis take over the game in the last quarter. C, Jack Graham make a welcome return to the top of the pressure act stats. Like, they were just Shane Edwards being far too clever for everyone else on the field. It just felt like the champ had returned. And, yeah, it was a lot of fun to see that in front of 50,000 people.
Yeah. I was certainly stressed during the game. But, it's interesting looking at the men's game. The stats are a lot more one-sided than it felt sort of watching it, like plus 34 inside 50s, which is, we had one game last year with a bigger inside 50 differential. 2019 we didn't have any. 14 more scoring shots. It's interesting that the story today is of plucky Carlton, and if only they'd taken some of their chances, or if only...
Well, Nick, in fairness, it's not just your perception. Dow had a shot with 7 minutes to play, and it was a decent shot that would have put them in front.
Mm.
I would have described the atmosphere in the Richmond members area as smug complacency. I don't think people ever got really upset, but at three-quarter time, I actually said to on one of the group chats we're on is this game's still in the balance and the good guys don't always win. There are plenty of universes where that third quarter could have turned into a loss. But, you're exactly right. We exactly deserve to win, and Carlton supporters complaining about the umpire have been ridiculous. You can't ever complain you're robbed when you're minus 24 in the inside 50s. The game was genuinely 34. My apologies. Just such an implausibly large number, isn't it? It's completely legitimate to say that it was a close game because they had a go ahead shot and with 7 minutes to play. So both things are true.
Mm. I feel like while we've had any number of articles celebrating Richmond, I still feel like we've come away from the weekend in pretty good shape. Like there's a bit of a no Dusty, no Richmond narrative going around, and Brisbane and Geelong had banana peel losses. So yeah, a long, long way to go, but there are worse places to be.
Yeah, it was a good weekend. The highlight, other than Richmond, was, because we're death riding Geelong this year because we got their number one pick, and also, you know, they're a key rival for the flag. Them getting rolled by the Crows and Tex Walker putting in a brilliant performance, you know, that did my heart so much good. And, you know, it's actually nice to see the Crows being sort of not awful, because, you know, it sort of, you know, makes them a more worthy loser to us in 2017. So, look, it was a wonderful weekend of football, and for the women as well, that as you brought up. A couple of pleasing things is, like, obviously we won. We actually won by exactly the same margin we did the year before. I think there was 1 point difference.
The same, the average margin of our previous 9 consecutive wins against Carlton.
Yes, exactly. Like, I mean, some ways you could say there's nothing new here, but it was one thing I was very pleased to see was the return of our grind game, which is something that the shorter quarters didn't allow us to do. But it looks like, and, you know, nothing's perfect, but, and this has been suggested by the club, is that the club has recruited a lot of people who can push longer into the quarters than other players. And that was certainly the case in 17 to 19, is that we often did our best work in time on. And that was back again, at least in one game against Carlton, as we were kicking a lot of goals late. Basically, we won the game in the last 5 minutes of every quarter. So that's quite exciting that real strength of our game from 17 to 19 is back.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a function of one of the big steps forward we did in 2017 was having a game plan really suited to the space of the MCG, and, you know, getting those not only fast players but guys who could cover a lot of ground. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. There were so many things good about the night. You know, I almost feel bad.
Well, to that point, Nick, we had about 20% more fast sprints by using the Telstra tracker than Carlton did, and like, that's a big difference, right? When you think about, like,
that is. Although I had a look at those stats, and they don't seem to correlate to winning. when I looked at them for last year, they were. You can get a lot of those stats if you're chasing the ball all day and the other team's controlling it. But I think in this case, your point that we were breaking super hard in space, that's definitely the case.
Yeah, and look, you know, it's easy when you're winning so well, or convincingly, it's easy to rationalise everything as being important. But yeah, it could, and being there, you couldn't help feel that our cover defence and our structure was very sound.
Mm. I thought the structure got a bit funky again, losing Nick Foster earlier than we'd like. I thought the defence did get a little, it's certainly less organised when he's not out there.
Yeah, that's true. And you also got to remember you're used to a better defence because the games were shorter, so there's less, and the rotations were higher. And part of what we're seeing is what we're going to see all year, which is probably a higher scoring. Teams are going to score more against us because the game has changed. But fortunately, it seems like at least on one game sample is that we are adjusting. Were well placed to handle the adjustment.
Maybe it's complacency, but I feel pretty good about the team. You know, there wasn't a lot of changes, familiar faces in familiar roles. No, Bolter, the occasional positioning mistake accepted. Seemingly having taken his game to another level, Toby Nankervis back and taking names and grinding souls, right? Shea Bolton looking picking off completely where he did last year. Like, it was good. It was a lot to like.
Yeah, I wonder how many teams have played a game with only one player that hasn't won a premiership before. Probably not many.
Not many.
No, but also, like, Dusty was as supremely awesome as was advertised in the preseason.
Yeah, was great. He was on the AFL player ratings points. He was 10% better than any other player in the competition on the weekend.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? And it felt like on the game, like it felt like the whole game was about him. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he just whenever he was around the football, the game was just more exciting. But you know, Shane Edwards looked as brilliant as he always does, or sort of top five in the ratings, as you say. Bolter looked incredible, and you know, had that really bad mistake early where he got in the wrong position and got out muscled, cost us a goal, and then you know. Then in that quarter, he took two brilliant high confidence intercept marks, one of which was just absolutely beautiful to watch. He's just such an incredible athlete, and that sort of the punch he did that the Richmond Twitter account retweeted. He's incredible and could go up to another level this year.
Mm. Speaking of going to another level. Jack Graham plays a whole season like that. We're gonna be in good shape.
Yeah, interesting game. In normal world, that would actually have been a 3-vote game, but he won't even get close because of Mr. Martin.
Second in the coaches' votes.
Yeah, but you know, it's just. There was no debate who's going to get the Brownlow there. But so 800 metres gained, 33 possessions. But what was really impressive and sort of a return of the champ was that he led all players on ground with pressure acts. And normally there's a trade-off between pressure acts and possessions, and there was none for him. And he's one of only three players to have that many that much metres gained, disposals and pressure acts in any game ever. So it's a pretty amazing game. Look, he's not perfect. Yeah. Dimmer gave an interesting description of him as a transition mid.
I had that in my notes, actually, because it was noticeable. You saw the Dusty heat map, and he had no possessions anywhere backwards of centre, pretty much. Jack Graham had a lot transitioning out of defensive 50, and that like it's not as flashy a role, but it's a really useful, industrious role in providing that run and energy.
Industrious is a really good word for it. You know, I was thinking watching him play at a mid ground level was. Fridge is a good nickname for him because it is like watching a very athletic Fridge motor around the ground. And he never does like an amazing hand pass like Shedder does or an incredible sort of – he never breaks tackles as athletically as Dusty does or Cochin, but he's just industrious and he keeps the lights on in the midfield, if you know what I mean. So, I mean – He'll never be a star with these sort of natural attributes, but God, like by the basic measures, that's an incredibly productive game. Like that's one of the most productive games by a Richmond midfielder, you know, outside the. Actually, should have checked, but I'm sure it's been a very long time since Cochin's had that many meters gained.
Yeah,
if ever.
Yeah, look, it's not his. Here's the stat for you. His career high in centre square clearances is 2. Like he's despite looking like a Fridge, he's not a real busting the packs.
That's a very revealing statistic, isn't it?
Whereas you know, Bolton and Prestia sort of are regularly a lot higher than that, and Dusty as well, but as a compliment to those guys, it works really well.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, centre clearance, he's not an explosive athlete, but sort of around the ground where his general work rate can shine, he's very effective. And I mean, okay, that is by far his best game, but. You know, it's a great time for the future if you can keep that up.
Notwithstanding the 2017 grand final.
True, but as on a ratings basis, that would have been higher too. Yeah, maybe not. I guess, yeah, but yeah, look, you know, it's easier to ask a couple of goals than it is to kick to have 33 touches and 50 pressure acts. Mm.
As I worried in the preview, Jacob Wietering did a very good job on Tom Lynch, but did look, the forward line didn't always work super well. I thought in the first quarter, if we'd converted better, we could have had quite a decent lead, given the amount of territory we'd had. But yeah, the forwards, Jack was really productive, but I thought the forwards worked hard, and sort of, you know, you got the sense that the dam was going to break eventually.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard one to really sort of get a handle on because, you know, we had, as we point out, we had 34 inside, plus 34 inside 50s, and yet only won by a little way. So, you know, looking at that from 1,000 miles away, it sort of looks like our forward line wasn't super functional. So if you were to point on one aspect of the game, that's not an unreasonable conclusion. But it didn't feel as bad there. Like, I mean, there was a problem that Lynch, yeah, as you said, was well held. Very disappointing that Man Crush didn't quite deliver. But Nick Jack had an incredible game. Mm. You know, the sort of the four goals and led the team on tackles, and that wasn't a coincidence either. He had 39 pressure acts. For a guy who's, you know, everyone's happily predicting he's very near the end, that was a very, very solid game. And some of those shots were not easy shots he was slotting.
No, and he's feeling good physically when he's slotting them from just inside 50 near the boundary with a sort of absolute, you know, gun barrel straight form. It was a nice effort.
Oh, absolutely. By the way, I have now checked, and the Cochin's career high meters gained was 575.
Hmm. Yep.
On the other hand, he once had a game with 22 contested possessions. So, you know, swings and roundabouts.
That's a lot.
Jack Graham had 8. So, you know, like there's a, you know, where Jack Graham's getting the football is fundamentally different.
Hmm. What did you think of the small forwards?
Okay, so the Jake Hartz thing, I'm glad you brought up. As you know, Nick, sort of, I have recently been going through a mellowing on Jake Hartz. Mm. And like, it makes sense to me. You know, we brought up, he's the only one playing who hadn't had a premiership before. And if you're going to keep the hunger, you're going to keep the team invigorated, you've got to bring in guys like Jake Hartz who are super hungry for their first medal. So it made sense to me. And like, he was good in preseason. Actually, his selection made a lot of sense to me, and especially in this sort of late era team where you need to keep the competitive juices flying. There was a moment where Jack's first shot at goal, which he missed, came through a Jake Hartz block.
Mm. Did you see the block that Nank put on for Tom Lynch's first goal?
Oh no, I missed that too. So like, he's doing a lot of it, obviously. And you know, he kicked the first goal of the game. Good on him. But Nick, I do have to say that sort of, you know, quoting Doctor Strange, you know that moment where Jake Hartz tried to burn off Assad to kick the goal?
That didn't work well.
I've been Doctor Strange, and I've looked through 10,000 million future
14 futures. 14 million possibilities.
And there's only one where Jake Hartz beats Saad in a foot race to kick that goal. On the upside, though, like 4 minutes later, he kicks a nice goal from a scrabbly contest that Jack created in the goal square, which is very much as Arts' wheelhouse is, you know, hard work, opportunism, being in the right place at the right time. But yeah, let's not try and take Saad on again in a foot race.
Not so much, no. I mean, Rioli was very quiet early, but look, he took a couple of nice chances. Yeah, without without ever really being in form, I thought.
Yeah, but you know, you've sort of, in some ways you've described the last 2 or 3 years of his career. But you know, the coaches love him for his structural work. His pressure acts are really low, but you know, 2 goals for him is not bad. And George,
2 goals for a small forward's very solid work.
Yeah, and George got 2, managed to look slightly unconvincing, kicking the ball from 3 metres away in the goal square. And I don't know if you heard the commentary, they were sort of wondering, when he kicked that goal around the corner, I was like, what was he trying to do exactly? Anyway, it was pure George, but always fun to, you know, he's a lot of fun to watch, George. He's never going to change.
Well, speaking of not changing, Camden McIntosh rampaging down the wing of the MCG. Never change.
No, and I love the moment where Casbolt fumbled and K-Mac just ended him. It was. He's a lot of fun to watch, isn't he?
I don't have a lot of notes on our defenders. I thought they weren't. Maybe it was the Vlosten injury, but I thought as a group they weren't quite as productive as usual.
No, so Shorty didn't. I'm sure he had 23 and 700 metres gained, which 2 years ago we would have thought was amazing, but these days we're kind of like, meh, it's what we expect from him. And there were a lot – I think the metres gained metrics are going to be reset because there were a lot of guys on our team who had their sort of – who had in top 20% performances, including Bolton, Rimwalt Short – Graham previously mentioned Lambo and McIntosh, so yeah, stats are a bit different.
Yeah, I did see something, and I'm apologies for not remembering exactly where, but saying that round one stats are often a bit funky and they do settle down in the next couple of weeks. Yeah, it was Richard Little on Twitter who said that. So yeah, there was some pretty tired boys out there.
One interesting thing is, like, we didn't play Broad that much. He only got 70% game time.
No, and he didn't notice him in the play very much either.
No, which, you know, is not unusual for Broad, but yeah. It was interesting. The play that I found quite interesting, which isn't exactly a back, but he did move further back when I think Vlossie got injured, was Pickett. I actually put out a tweet at halftime saying what a good game he was having because he had 10 possessions. He'd run back with the ball, flight nicely. And you don't notice him. He does run hard back defensively, and I think he led all the game for the most sprints. And you do notice it live, you know, how hard he's working. And he's terrifying.
He was also the fastest player on the ground, which you wouldn't quite think he's faster than somebody like Saad, but he is genuinely quick.
Yeah, and you know, he's genuinely terrifying running back with the flight of the ball. He almost killed CCJ once in a VFL game, he's great at it, but in that running back, but yeah, when you watch on the TV the second time, he's making a lot of errors.
Yeah, he had 7 intercepts, but 6 clangers, which that's one number's good and the other's bad. And I don't know if with Cochin coming back in, you have to pick somebody to go out. I think he's a chance.
The problem is he's just so hard working and covering that wing.
I know, which I'm sure Dimmer loves that.
Because God bless him. You know, Josh Caddy was very solid. 17 disposals, kicked a goal.
Nearly 500.
He just
400. 450 meters gained.
He's just a bit slow though.
Yeah.
You know, he's not slow by normal, but he's just. He probably wouldn't be slow in most AFL teams, but he just feels a bit slow in the Richmond team.
He provides an extra marking target up forward that we don't really need at the moment. So, yeah, it is. Those two are sort of players, 21 and 22, from Friday night, I think.
Richmond's a team these days where we have a lot of, we don't have a lot of Swiss Army knives, we have a lot of scalpels. We have people who have a one wood, and they're very much, I know Dimmer likes to say we're very versatile as a team, and that might make sense to him. But actually, if you look at our players, like very few of them play anything more than one or two positions. Like, you know, watching down the line Dave completely struggle with his spatial awareness while he's ruck, you know, it just highlights the fact that he spent his entire career, except for 1 year, playing the one position, which is great. You know, like, it's all good. But Josh Caddy's a Swiss Army knife. He can do a lot of things well, but nothing really well. Mm-hmm. So I just don't know where he fits on this team, even though, like, he's quite a likable footballer.
Yeah, he's a good footballer. Like, I think
he exudes competence. Mm. Like, no one ever said that about, you know, Jason Castagna or Camden McIntosh. Like, they exude different things, but yeah, he's just those two players seem to have a far more obvious role on the team.
Mm. To finish off the men, resuming a great Richmond Tiger Talk tradition, what did you think of the sub?
Oh, yes. Wonderful to have it back. I was spending a lot of time looking at the bench once it looked like Vlossie was out. By the way, Vlossie couldn't bend down to kick up a football. He was so obviously injured. And of all the people that you wouldn't want to sub, it'd be Vlossie. In my head, I thought, sort of made Dusty, Nank, and possibly Short, and maybe Lynch are the four players that Dimmer would rather not sub ahead of Vlossie.
Yeah, it's a short list.
Yeah. Disappointed. It was good to have Ross. I thought he was eminently competent. 8 disposals, and like, he was just useful,
yeah,
right? Was
five, what the sub, want five, the sub to be. 5 inside 50s from 8 disposals. Yeah.
Yeah. And he just one nice, you know, some decent center square work. I thought he was perfectly adequate.
Mm. Yep. I think he proved the concept that he could be an entirely competent as a sub. He's still only 20 years old as well. Like, yeah, I think, yeah, there's a fair bit to work with.
Hmm. So anyway, all very satisfying.
So speaking of satisfying, although also quite tense, and occasionally frustrating, kicking for goal. But I thought the women's game on Sunday was, under the conditions, another pleasing game of football.
Yeah, actually, I was kind of glad that, I mean, because at the end of the day, like, we're not going to make finals. We've got the first win out of the way. Like, you know, at this stage, you're just looking for development and interesting play. And the fact that the Eagles came back and made it a fun game, I thought that was good for Richmond and for the comp, especially given the debate that earlier that weekend had been about how uneven the comp was. So, you know, I didn't mind at all that
the comp is genuinely uneven. We're now a rare middle class team, like 3-5 record, percentage of 86, and if that holds for the end of the season, like we said at the start of the year, sort of setting expectations, 2010 we ended up with a 6-16 record with a percentage of 73, which, given where we were halfway through the year, felt like a victory. But the year before, 2011, we then finished with a percentage of 86, and it really did feel like we were starting to build something. And yeah, I don't. The progress is tangible.
Yeah, and the team's very watchable. I thought Brennan was amazing again. Mm. Obviously, the star of the team, and stood up and kicked the goal that you know, when we're just a little in trouble, and very appropriately. Mackenzie was the one who said it, gave it to her, and she's also the other emerging star of the team. Like you can see where this team is coming from and where it's going.
The to quote Dusty, who you know, probably summarise things in 20 words that we take about 1,000. In his interview, he said, I've been getting into the girls, especially Ellie McKenzie. She's a jet. I think, I don't know if they, game recognizes game, but she really is an elite athlete. And through the, she's always going to have the, the pace and the beautiful left foot. But combining that with, on a, rainy day at Punt Road Oval, tough contested footy against a team probably in a pretty similar situation. I thought, hers was a occasionally flashy but extremely workmanlike effort.
Yeah, I think her stock is definitely. I don't think this is very revelatory, but her stock, which was already extremely high, has gone up. And I think going into 2022, she'll become the face of the club.
Which would be my guess. Which is something given. So Mon Conti is second in AFLW in both disposals and contested possessions. She's also really good.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, Katie Brennan's really good too. Like, the team now has three really good players.
While we're doing stats, which is like always, Katie Brennan third in the competition in contested marks and score involvements. Her stats in both areas, her stats are way up on last year.
Yeah, absolutely. As discussed last week. Courtney Wayfield as well, also very much impressed me in the wet.
Just presented all day, pretty good hands. Sarah Darcy and Harriet Cordner at the other end of the ground as well. West Coast always looked dangerous going forward, but those two are really solid.
Yeah, anyway, well done to them. The teams, and one last game, Nick, and I might even, if things go well, I might even sneak over to the Western Oval to see the last game of the year. Quite looking forward to it.
I think the Bulldogs will start slight favourites, but yeah, that'll be another really interesting game.
Yeah, absolutely. The Bulldogs are making the finals, but
I don't think they are, actually.
My bad. I'll check that in a sec. But what do we want? We want good, competitive, hard footy, and that's what they're delivering.
Yeah.
Obviously we want premierships, it's a short season, so the making the finals dream went away a little while ago. But, So, what do we think about Hawthorn? Hawthorn.
Well, I was thinking the betting line would be fairly close, and it's not. Oh, Bulldogs by 10 points. So, maybe we have got a little bit excited with our recent form.
They've only won one more game than us, and their percentages blow ours. So
yeah,
that's interesting.
We've enjoyed a pretty good draw recently. So. When you've only played 8 of the other 13 teams, who you play in an uneven competition does make a big difference. Before we get to the Hawthorn, the VFL had a practice game, but yeah, honestly, it was hard to get a lot out of the highlights or the match recap, other than our absolutely gigantic forwards in Samson Ryan and Callum Coleman-Jones having 3 goals each and being quite productive, and The occasional moment of Maurice Rioli Jr. crunching dudes, but yeah, I'm looking forward to the VFL proper season proper starting in about a month and actually getting some statistics and, God forbid, game footage. Well, full game footage.
Yeah, I feel like reading the game reports on the RFC website is a bit like reading Tolstoy. very nicely written, but tells me absolutely nothing about what's happening in the Richmond VFL team. The goal's about the only thing we can draw from it. I'm looking forward to actual games for points where they have statistics and best on, which I suspect both exist, but are not being shared with fans, which, you know, is not unreasonable. It's just a VFL practice game, but I'm not drawing any two conclusions just based on what we have to hand. But I'm really looking forward to the season starting because, you know, like Maniac, I love a good VFL game.
Well, and developing ruckman as well, and we've got a couple of them.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. All right.
So,
now,
Hawthorn, you know, stirring comeback victory, and the betting line moves slightly our way as a result of it.
Yes, the gambling, the people whose job is to set gambling lines are not believers in Hawthorn. We are massive favourites. Yep. 30.5 favourites.
30 points. I think that might be... I'm sure their models are driven by inside 50s, and the Hawks were down about 10 or so. But yeah, look, it was an extremely entertaining game. But this is a Hawthorn team very much in transition. They actually have a highly drafted, very good young player in the team for once, in Will Day, who was there. 2019 first round draft pick, and who looked really good on the weekend. But the structure is of the team are some very familiar names in Tom Mitchell, Jager O'Meara, Tom Mitchell with 28 handballs.
I mean, he's back though, so I mean that's a little bit of a cause for concern.
It is it's going to be a pretty. Neither are sort of overwhelming names, but McAvoy and Segler together are that's a pretty good one to punch in the ruck. Their key defenders are particularly Sam Frost. Statistically comes up much better than you'd think for somebody traded from Melbourne for a fourth round draft pick. They had Josh Kaczynski, who's no relation, but a fairly raw young key position forward. But their key position depth at either end of the ground isn't great. And yeah, I think they're going to try and, I mean, their number of possessions was really high. It was over 400 with nearly 100 marks. So if you want a guide to how Hawthorn want to play the game, they want to win it in the contest with O'Meara and Mitchell. And then get it on the outside where they can control the tempo through uncontested marks. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting test of style for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, they're not young.
No, surprisingly. Part of that's Sean Burgoyne cooking the stats a little bit. But, yeah, It's a transition team. They had
Essendon. They had eight players with less than 50 games experience, which is, you know, generally when you're above 10, you're really in the rebuilding zone. Essendon, for instance, had 12, and eight sort of in the with less than 50 games. You know, that's very much a mid-table sort of profile. I mean, obviously younger than us, but you know, we're the premiers.
Only one player on the team drafted in the first round by Hawthorn. That's Will Day, who I mentioned.
Yeah, it's an interesting team, but the problem with and you know, we're all terribly worried about Kyle Hardigan and Tyler Brockman and other big names. Oliver Hanrahan at all? Anyone? you know, the problem with mature teams is they're normally competitive.
Yeah, and they have a, with Clarkson, they have a definite style. Like, and I do think there'll be a fair bit of it'll either be an extreme contest or them chip with us chasing them down. Now, if we can put guys like Tom Phillips or Jarman Impey under pressure and with their skills, then hopefully we can generate some turnovers and get our style of football. But I reckon it could be quite frustrating for long periods of the day.
Yeah, and it may be a wet day as well. It's rain is scheduled for Saturday, but you know, G dries quickly, so just if it doesn't rain during the game, it won't be wet. But yeah, I think the 30 point spread might be a bit generous.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if we lost, but as I said, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a pretty frustrating day at the office for us.
Probably, if it is a bit wet and Tommy Mitchell's playing well, it probably won't hurt us. The Cochin had a week off, and
assuming he's feeling better again.
Yeah, well, I mean, I take Dimmer on his word that he had food poisoning. He talked a lot about he made it all about Cochin when he talked about it, but a little bit surely has to be that we thought, well, there's no point in playing someone who might be 50% or 15% off his game, because that, you know,
it's a marathon. It's a marathon.
Lessons have been learnt on that front.
It's a marathon.
It means he's fresh this week.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'd be quite pleased for Cochin to return. And I don't know. I'm just really enjoying watching this team play football. We're very lucky to be following such a talented, interesting team.
I'm a little sad it's our last weekend of having both the women and the men. I think. They could extend the win. now that we've got a better team, I'm certainly happy for them to both extend the regular season and hopefully in a year or two see us have a crack at finals as well.
Yeah, and I know there was a debate on Insiders about whether the AFLW should expand right now. And, you know, Caro conflated it with the Tasmanian thing, and you know, everyone went with a more expansion now sort of argument, because that's always the safer argument, especially when you've got a few big clubs lobbying.
Yeah, and Hawthorn do have a very good VFL team. Like, I didn't come to the argument, like, looking at how unbalanced it is, I was like, oh, maybe they should delay. But I also get that, like, Hawthorn have really invested in their VFL program and got a genuinely good team, so yeah, I can see their case as well.
Also, we had a good VFL team, and then it got absolutely massacred when the bullets started flying. But yeah, I actually can see both sides too, because like you really don't want another, like, having a season like we did in 2020 is not good for the game. And you have three or four more clubs like that, but is that season a necessary? Like, are you always going to have that season in the first season, and do you just get that over and done with? I don't know. There's a perfect answer to that.
Well,
but
one of the problems of AFLW was in the selection of teams, and look, that was a whole number of reasons, but that the AFL failed to prioritise the bigger clubs has meant that there's a number of very big clubs left out, and also Port Adelaide not having a team has concentrated all the South Australian talent in Adelaide, and they've been extremely good pretty much the whole time. So yeah, I can sort of, as you say, there's an argument both ways, but yeah, I
Yeah, because the thing is, like this, just in general, the league's so much more watchable than it was a couple of years ago. No one wants to go back. But you know, is the junior pipeline good enough to sustain it? Anyway, Nick, we are getting far out of our level, our areas of expertise here, and we might actually have no guarantees, but we might have a future guest on who we can put all these questions to, and be who, unlike us, might actually know what they're talking about. But yeah, and we can go back to talking about pressure rack stats, which we are far more comfortable with.
Yeah, well, it's like the weather's nice, the football's good. We had a banana peel game against the Hawks last year, which I've also got in the back of my mind. But I feel like we're in a much better headspace to avoid that.
Oh, and just last thing before we wrap up, Nick, is that do you think that Jack Graham listened to last week's podcast and his game was a personal FU to both of us for not listing him as a future captain?
We also didn't mention Toby Nankervis. I felt bad about that.
Yeah, I think Toby's pre-game fire-up speeches will be fairly short.
Nank smash!
Everyone remember. Well, I mean, we joke, but Toby's one and only memorable media moment was when he refused to talk to Brian Table and Taylor and walked away.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.